Kate Buford, welcome to Oklahoma Voices.
I'm delighted to be here. Thank you for having me.
Could you just real quickly just kind of give me a basic biography of Jim Thorpe? Tell me who he was. It's been 62 years since he passed away. I feel like a lot of people probably don't remember exactly who he was.
Jim Thorpe was our first international celebrity athlete. He was born in 1887 and grew up at a time when organized sports, except perhaps for baseball, which was already organized, were in their infancy. Football, basketball, and the Olympics. They were brand new, modern Olympics. This was all brand new, and that's very important to remember. He astonished the world at the 1912 Olympics in Stockholm by winning by huge margins both the decathlon and the pentathlon, the ultimate tests of the complete athlete. And this was so new. He set a standard, a gold standard, if you will, of athletic performance. He became almost like a folk hero, like a Paul Bunyan, if you will. He could do not only the Olympic sports, but he had already excelled in collegiate football, playing for the Carlisle Indian Industrial School, one of the early Indian boarding schools that were set up in the at the end of the 19th century as part of an Indian reform movement. He also became an extremely good baseball player, a fact that's been largely forgotten, and he was one of the founding members, the first president, as they called it then, of what would become the NFL. He also was a good basketball player, but he became this touchstone. So when sports reporters would get together and ask who was the greatest athlete of all, they compared any newcomer to Jim Thorpe. So he looms very, very large in the history of American sports.
Just how big a deal was he at the time? Who could you compare him to today?
People always ask that question, and you get a bunch of sports reporters around, and they will always ask that question and banter it about. People have said, suggested athletes such as Deion Sanders, often even Jim Brown. Jackie Robinson was a good multi-sport athlete. But no one really has excelled in all of these sports, baseball, football, track and field, to the extent that Jim Thorpe did. And also, and this is something Jim really railed against as an athlete himself, almost as soon as he had started being an athlete, American athletes were pressured to specialize. He didn't have to do that. He could try everything because, again, it was brand new. But now athletes have to specialize, so they can't be the multi-talented athlete that he was.
What about in terms of his celebrity status? How widely regarded was he, not just for sports, but for everything else about his life?
Well, that's a very good question. He became and remains the sort of paradigm of the athlete's life. You're born you with certain natural gifts. You cultivate them through training. You excel in different sports. But the human body can only be that good for so long. And then you have the rest of your life to lead. And for him, his greatest athletic feats preceded the so-called golden age of American sports, which was the decade of the 1920s. That's when advertising, testimonials, agents who would get very good contracts and a great deal of money for athletes such as Jack Dempsey or Babe Ruth, all of that begins and flowers in the 1920s. He just misses that. But he becomes this archetype of the great athlete who then has to figure out how he's going to live the rest of his life. And what I found very interesting about this book was that people assumed that after the triumphs of 1912 and then the professional football career in Canton, Ohio, that he was just one long slide, that his life sort of went to pot. In fact, he had a remarkable life after that, not least going to Hollywood to make over 70 movies. But reporters always watched him and interviewed him and came and knocked on his door over and over again because they wanted to see what happens to the great athlete once the greatest days are over. So his life looms as a kind of paradigm still. And we've seen so many other athletes' lives continue on that pattern since.
How did his native ancestry color how the public perceived him? I mean, his greatest athletic triumphs came as, you know, the United States was dealing with a very turbulent time in its racial history. Native Americans weren't even regarded as U.S. citizens in some cases until 1924. Did the public know about his native ancestry? Did they care about his native ancestry?
That's a very interesting question and goes to really the core of his story in many ways. he was such a terrific athlete. He was such a sensation that around the world and in most of this country, I would say perhaps except for Oklahoma in some ways, his identity as a great athlete trumped his Native American identity. It just was so fabulous that people identified with him as a great athlete. If anything, the fact that he was Native American and came out of Oklahoma, had grown up on a reservation, that added a certain romance to his story outside of Oklahoma. In Oklahoma, it's a little different because of the complicated history of that state and the fact that it was promised forever initially to the Native American tribes who were removed, in the euphemism of the federal government, to Oklahoma. And then, of course, that didn't happen, and it became a state in 1907, just as he's growing up. But elsewhere, this kind of, this allure of the Native American, the American Indian, who astonishes the world with his feats in 1912 and already was a great track and field athlete and football player, collegiate football player in this country, this was what people identified him with, was his status as an athlete.
Given that complicated history you just described, how did Jim Thorpe regard the state of Oklahoma?
He loved his native state deeply. But to be realistic, again, the history of Oklahoma is complicated. Its relations with Native Americans from its earliest inception as a territory reserved for Native Americans gets complicated. He grew up just as the allotment system went in, the land runs begin. He grows up in a period of enormous cultural change and tumult right around Shawnee and Prague and Oklahoma City where he grew up. So he leaves to go to Carlisle Indian Industrial School in the early 1900s. And essentially, except for coming back to live in his home in Yale for a few years, Yale, Oklahoma, he lives in a white world and away from Oklahoma. When he came back to Oklahoma, his son Jack would tell me that often he was regarded, again, at that time, with many wonderful exceptions, he would be regarded as an Indian by and large, even with these amazing triumphs. Anywhere else, again, this identity as the world's greatest athlete trumped and overcame and dominated his identity. But at his very core, he remained an Oklahoman in that his greatest loves, and he would always disappoint sports reporters when they would say, "Hey, Jim, what was your favorite sport?" Expecting to hear, you know, "Oh, running for this touchdown," or, you know, "doing the 1500 meter in 1912 in Stockholm." And he would just say, "Hunting and fishing." And that's where he began in Oklahoma with his father. And I think that's always where he wanted to come back. He wanted to sit by a fire at the end of the day after being out with his dogs and his guns, hunting and fishing, and look back on an amazing life. I think that's at his core. And that was in Oklahoma.
Given that deep love of the state, how did Oklahoma regard him, both during his life, at the time of his death, and then even today?
Oklahoma, there were various Oklahomas. There were many people, several people who, upstanding citizens who valued his accomplishments and his status as a great native son, who tried to find jobs for him, to get him to relocate to Oklahoma. He, at this time, was living in Southern California, had this whole other life in Hollywood. He appeared in at least 70 movies, maybe double that. Some of the records of those films are gone. So his life really was centered in Southern California. But several Oklahomans kept trying to find him jobs and positions in Oklahoma to bring him home. And he would flirt with the idea, but then be lured back to Hollywood. He was constantly called back, particularly for Native American affairs, to represent Native American tribes and their interests in Oklahoma. The attitude was of great pride, at the same time, somewhat of an ambivalence, and that's complicated.
As someone who's studied and written about Jim Thorpe, what's your perspective on the decision by his third wife to have him buried in Pennsylvania, a town he never even visited, when he had this deep love of Oklahoma, and based on everything you just told me, he would have wanted to be buried here?
Initially, he was going to be buried in Oklahoma, and his third wife, Patsy, knew that and came with the body back to Shawnee after he had died in Southern California. He was brought back to Shawnee, and there were great plans to build a memorial to Jim Thorpe in Shawnee that would rival the one in Claremore for Will Rogers. The money was appropriated by the legislature, an enormous enthusiasm for it, and then the governor, Governor Murray, ran into a deficit and canceled the appropriation. Patsy still hung on, the wife, the widow. She still wanted him to be buried in Oklahoma because that's where she knew he wanted to be buried. She moved the body at one point to Tulsa. That did not work out either. So by this point, this is the fall of 1953. He died in the spring of 53. She is looking about for an appropriate place that will memorialize him the way she wants him to be memorialized, with a proper mausoleum and space and memorial. And through several steps, she ends up in Pennsylvania, in Mount Chunk, a place he never was. You have to understand that this was preceded by several other offers and initiatives on her part, including Carlisle, Pennsylvania. So her initial impulse, her initial wish was to honor his desire to be buried in Oklahoma with an appropriate memorial, but that did not work out.
Do you have any thoughts about what might happen next? Do you think the Supreme Court will take up this case? Do you think ultimately someday Jim Thorpe will wind up back in Oklahoma?
I don't know. I can't second guess the Supreme Court. I hope they take it up because I think it would be, regardless of which way it goes, the attention being paid to this issue is very important and is productive. However it's decided, it will form an important precedent for the Native American Graves Protection and Repatriation Act of 1990, which is the act under which they filed, the Sons and the Sac and Fox Nation have filed this appeal. I can't second guess. I would hope myself, and I've said this from the beginning, that there would be a win-win, that the town would gracefully give up the remains but keep the core identity and honor the good job they've done according to the terms of what they agreed to in 1953, and his remains could come back to Oklahoma. I don't know if that's going to happen. We'll have to wait and see.
Finally, I want to ask you, it's been 103 years since his Olympic triumphs in Stockholm. Why do people still care about Jim Thorpe, even six decades after his death?
I think Jim Thorpe really looms as perhaps the last, or certainly one of the last, of what you could call a folk hero. Someone whose exploits, however exaggerated in some ways, but certainly at their core they needed no exaggeration, were so fabulous and so new and set such a high standard that there's no one that's come along like him since. And also, again, to return to Oklahoma, his identity as a Native American only adds, as what one sports writer called the romance of his story, that he comes out of nowhere, supposedly, Oklahoma, the Midwest, nowhere meaning no one has ever heard of him, at Stockholm, and he astonishes the world. I think that these exploits remain in people's minds. Also the fact, though, and this is, again, you get back to the paradigm of the great athlete who has to live the rest of his life when his body has begun to fail him, his difficulties in later life only added to the poignancy of his story, that he would go to such peaks of achievement and, I would argue, not fall to such depths as people assume, but went on very productively in his life. But nevertheless, the difficulties of his life, contrasted with the great exploits, make for almost an operatic story, and I think that's what appeals to people deeply.
That's Kate Buford. She's the author of Native American Son, The Life and Sporting Legend of Jim Thorpe. Kate, thank you for being here.
Thank you very much. You're welcome.